Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio. Hello and happy Friday. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
So this week we dallied with pie a little bit.
We did.
Do you want to know why I ended up doing this episode?
I do.
I have a very close friend who I love more than most humans on earth, who is adamant that if it is savory, it should not be called pie.
And okay.
We've had this debate for many years. And I'm like, no, my love, savory pies were here first. Mm-hmm. And like everything was pie. And so I just,
I love a savory pie.
Oh, I love a savory pie. I love all the pies.
Our Christmas dinner this year in the throes of Omicron COVID spike, when we saw no one, was a chicken pie that I got as a pickup order from a local bakery, along with some sides that we had to go with it, and it was so good.
Oh, I love a savory pie. I love a chicken pot pie. I am less enthused than people would think about shepherd's pie.
I love a shepherd's pie.
I like it, but I want it in a crust.
Yeah.
Like, I love the mashed potatoes on top, but, like, a crust is really what I'm after in a pie.
It is kind of, and it doesn't follow some of the rules of what you would call a pie.
Right. It's more of a casserole.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
That's another thing from, like, the first long stretch of the pandemic when we were not eating in restaurants or really for a while ordering food from restaurants at our house. I had this stretch where I was like, you know what I just really want to do so bad is just go to a bar and have a shepherd's pie and a beer. And it doesn't even need to be good shepherd's pie. It can be adequate.
Mediocre.
Adequate, mediocre. It was just like that whole experience I missed so much. And none of the restaurants, once we did start ordering more takeout, none of the restaurants near us had shepherd's pie on the menu. One did for St. Patrick's Day the other day, and I did get some St. Patrick's Day shepherd's pie.
Nice. Do you have a favorite pie?
Oh, man, that'd be really hard to narrow down. In terms of a sweet pie, I really do like cherry pie. I also like pumpkin pie a lot, except I will often treat the pumpkin pie as a vehicle to get the whipped cream into my mouth.
Oh no, pumpkin pie for days. I love it.
I like a lot of different savory pies. Chicken pot pie is really good. Chicken and dumplings is not really a pie. But sometimes in the wintertime, my spouse makes chicken and dumplings, and it's so good and so comforting.
Pumpkin pie forever. I love it. My husband's favorites are pecan pie and key lime pie.
Key lime pie is delicious.
It is very good. I've never managed to get one exactly right, but his beloved Aunt Beth, who is now no longer with us, used to make him a pecan pie anytime he visited, and he would talk about Aunt Beth's amazing pecan pie. And I finally was like, Aunt Beth, who I loved, that woman, she was like walking history. She knew everything about everything. But I had asked her about it, and she was like, I just got it off the bag. And it was like, whoops. I have since made many pecan pies for him, which I also love.
Yeah. On the very first Jonathan Colton cruise, one of the first nights, they had key lime pie on the menu as one of the dessert options, and almost our whole table ordered that. And then we saw the table behind us send their key lime pie back, like in unison. And we were like, what was up with your pie? And it bless whoever was working in the kitchen. They had not made a good key lime pie. And somebody said it tasted like sadness, and sadness pie then became like a cruise in joke. But after that, it was like, for a while, anytime I saw key lime pie on the menu, I ordered it to try to erase the memory of the one that just had no flavor.
I wonder if they actually used key lime in it or not. Because that will, like, a regular lime juice sub out is not acceptable.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
I'm sure there's some chemistry related reason of like the acidity of each different one or something, but it doesn't taste right. Key lime pie. I could eat a lot of pie.
When I was a child, when we needed to take a dessert somewhere and my mom just did not have time, she would make this pie called Hershey bar pie, which you took 5 of the 6 Hershey bars in a 6-pack of Hershey bars. You melted them and folded them into a container of Cool Whip and put that into the fridge.
Boop.
In a crust, like in a graham cracker crust, I think is what it would go in. That's way more delicious than it has any right to be.
Listen, sometimes it's magical. We mentioned that we were going to talk about this abolitionist thing in pumpkin pie.
Yeah.
And what people often reference is that several abolitionists that also wrote about cookery wrote about pumpkin pie, which is true.
Uh-huh.
Sarah Hale is often brought up, but she wrote about a lot of food.
Yeah, yeah.
She also did have an anti-slavery novel, which was called Northwood, and it had pumpkin pie in it and is referenced as being the best dish on the table or the most distinguished dish on the table. And so I think people have made those connections that it might be a clue, because Lydia Maria Child also talked about pumpkin pie, of course, in her New England Thanksgiving poetry. But again, those are all kind of like, you're connecting dots, but it's not necessarily like clear to me.
Yeah. I remember also seeing some discussion of, there were a lot more people growing pumpkins in their little home farm plots. And it was more of a like small garden kind of crop,
right,
rather than the sort of like much larger crop that would be, that would have an enslaved workforce, and like people making a connection there. And it all felt like, to me, when I was reading all of that, that it was sort of pulling together some things to build a story. And I was like, I would like this a lot more if somebody had unearthed an essay that someone had written about how we should all eat pumpkin pies,
right,
as a symbol of our abolitionist feelings.
Yeah, I mean, like you, it's like it seems like there are interesting things going on that then have a lot of additional meaning ascribed to them.
Mm-hmm.
When it is just as likely that because pumpkins grow all over North America pretty readily and are pretty easy. I mean, a pumpkin pie is actually quite easy to make.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it seems natural that a lot of people would have adopted pumpkin pie and really loved it, because I certainly do. It's a little bit of a stretch. It feels to me, perhaps some piece of information will be unearthed that will change all of our minds and be like, nope, it really was a secret code. but not so far, especially because it still involved sugar.
Yeah.
Which there were abolitionists that were like, no, I'm not baking sweet things because
right.
I don't want to be part of that.
Yeah.
But pumpkin pie, I didn't stumble across any that were like, don't use sugar, which would have supported that idea a little bit more.
Yeah.
But no. But I sure want to bake. I know it's springtime. I'm ready for a pumpkin pie. May have to happen. I will tell you one of the saddest things that ever happened to me. This is like pathetic. You know how when like you go to someone else's house for a holiday and you have those things you love about the holiday, and then they're not the same at that house. I will not say who, but I had gone to someone's house for the first time for a holiday. And I had said something about, will there be pumpkin pie beforehand? And they were like, oh, yeah, we can do that. And what I didn't know was that in their head, they said, we'll go buy a frozen pumpkin pie and throw it in the oven. And like, not to dog on anybody that does that, but like pumpkin pie is so easy to make. Oh, man. It gave me the sads.
Yeah.
I'm very pro pumpkin pie. That whole like pie is addictive and is a monster was a shocker to me.
Yeah, that was very strident in its arguments against pie.
And there were a lot of people in that camp that were like, no, pie is there was like a significant number of physicians that were like, we got to get Americans to stop eating pie.
Mm-hmm.
Which again, like nutritionally, yes, you should not be eating pie all the time for every meal, but that's like true of any balanced diet, right? But I'm fascinated by the tug of war over pie. And of course, now everyone is like, as American as apple pie. And I'm like, that's English.
Right.
All right. Let's go bake pies.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step, and you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what He says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you think Abuelita knows best? Wilmer Valderrama here, executive producer of the podcast De My Abuelita First. And we definitely do. Join us while our host Vico Ortiz and our abuelita Liliana Montenegro play matchmaker for you loving hopefuls out there. Vico?
Yes, yes, Wilmer. We are ready for another wild ride. Listen every Thursday as Abuelita Liliana and I meet three single cuties who will vie for a date with one lucky dater. Except, to get their heart, they have to win over Abuelita first.
How PG is this?
Not at all. Totally are. Abuelita's here, so bring it.
Through speed dating rounds, hilarious games, and AI, Abuelita's intuition, one contestant might be lucky enough to become the perfect match. Let's see if chispas will fly or if these singles will be sent back to the dating apps.
Listen to De My Abuelita First as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Week on the show, we talked about the Gallaudet 11.
We sure did.
Contributions to the space program. When I saw that conversation on Twitter that we talked about at the end of the episode, I was like, that sounds really cool and interesting. And it seems clear that a lot of folks have been trying to make that story more widely known. Sounds awesome. And I wasn't totally aware when I got into it how much motion sickness I was going to be reading about. Motion sickness, a thing I am susceptible to and feel like over the course of the pandemic, when I was not doing as much travel by any means other than my own feet, I feel like I've become more susceptible to it. It's like I lost my adaptation to being in a car or on a train or a subway or whatever.
I think that's actually, though, common, right? Most people get more prone to motion sickness as they get older. Is that just an old wives' tale?
It would not surprise me. It seems likely. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that happens in your ears as you age.
Right. I will say this. I can't handle roller coasters that I used to be able to handle no problem the same way. Brian and I have both discussed, like, when we go to amusement parks, there's like a, well, we've reached, let's sit on the bench and wait for the kids' age. Like,
yeah.
So our younger friends will go ride and we're like, no, thank you. I have no problem, I don't think, or had not until maybe recently, with any inner ear stuff. I can read in a car that I'm not driving, no problem. I can do, tummy is a different deal though. Like, if you get a shooka 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 going on with my stomach contents, there might be some nausea.
Yeah. You were with me for one of the most dramatic and sudden experiences of motion sickness in my whole life.
I feel some degree of guilt because I feel like I caused it.
No, you didn't cause it. I was super excited about this experience until moment one of it starting, which was on Star Tours. I was very excited about Star Tours. And we say in the episode that motion sickness is still not entirely known. It is, there's still unanswered questions about motion sickness, but like the most widely accepted explanation for what causes it is like a mismatch between what your eyes are seeing and what's happening in your vestibular system.
Right.
And that's definitely what was happening in this case, because immediately the slight difference between what I was seeing and the gimbal rig in Star Tours, just instantly, it was like, oh, I'm going to spend my entire remainder of this ride focusing the entirety of my being on keeping my contents inside my body.
Within my person. It's very funny, too. I wonder, and I don't want to put you through it to test it, but I do wonder what some of the newer rides, and of course I'm thinking specifically of Star Warsy rides, would do to you. Like, I think probably Smuggler's Run, which is the Millennium Falcon ride, I think that might be problematic.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know about Rise of the Resistance, though, because there's less of the VR stuff. You're more like in it. So that would be curious, but I would not want to be like, Tracy, get on this. Let's see if you barf.
No. Well, and that's, I just pretty much don't. The only VR thing I think I've tried that I did not have an issue with was when we were on our honeymoon in Iceland, and there is a whale museum in Iceland that had like a VR headset, look at the ocean and see whales. And it was like a soothing enough experience without a ton of detail. And like you would just sort of be panning through the ocean to look for whales, and nothing was very sudden or jerky. And like, also I was in control of the whole thing, which I think helped. So anyway, that's the one. Otherwise I see the VR headset and I'm like, no, thanks.
I'd love it. This made me think so much about balance and nausea. Like, I thought about spotting in ballet. I don't know if you've ever taken a dance class where you had to learn spotting, which for anybody that hasn't, it's basically how you teach dancers to be able to do many turns without getting dizzy, where you keep your head kind of focused on one thing and you turn it at the last possible minute in relation to your body so that you whip right around and look back at that thing again. I never had an issue with dizziness doing turns, but I definitely knew people that did. But then what I really thought about, as you talked about everybody getting sick on various apparatus, was going deep sea fishing with my dad. Where you kind of get the lecture, at least on the boat we used to always charter, of if you get sick, that's fine, but get sick and keep fishing, which is many people did. I never got sick. I had a couple of moments in particularly lurchy water where, again, it was the stomach thing where I was like, if I could just stare at a point, I'm fine. And I don't think about my tummy too much. But I watched my dad throw up and fish many times.
I didn't know this until the first cruise I ever went on. I was totally fine the whole time. The second one that I went on, we went through this place called the Windward Passage, where in addition to the motion of the ship was being buffeted by winds that were making it have this like side to side motion. I had to leave during dinner and like try a variety of places to be like, do I feel better here? No, in fact, I do not.
Oh, that is the worst feeling. Just trying to find some solace.
Yeah. In other circumstances, if I had gone out onto the deck, I probably would have felt better, but it was extremely hot and muggy on the deck. And so it was like walking out and just feeling hot, wet washcloth air hit my face. Yeah. And I was like, nope, that's worse.
It's not helping. No.
So I told my dad the story, and he was like, your grandfather was the same way and also loved deep sea fishing. And so what he would do is he would go and he would set his line and just lie down on the deck. Just wait for something to happen.
Whoosh. I think the only time I've been motion sick was in a very small plane, like truly motion sick. And I didn't throw up, but I was close enough that Brian grabbed one of the motion sickness bags and was like, you are green. You are literally the color green.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
Yeah.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if... No. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you think Abuelita knows best? Wilmer Valderrama here, executive producer of the podcast De My Abuelita First. And we definitely do. Join us while our host Vico Ortiz and our abuelita Liliana Montenegro play matchmaker for you loving hopefuls out there. Vico?
Yes, yes, Wilmer. We are ready for another wild ride. Listen every Thursday as Abuelita Liliana and I meet three single cuties who will vie for a date with one lucky dater. Except, to get their heart, they have to win over Abuelita first.
How PG is this?
Not at all. Totally are. Abuelita's here, so bring it.
Through speed dating rounds, hilarious games, and AI, Abuelita's intuition, one contestant might be lucky enough to become the perfect match. Let's see if chispas will fly or if these singles will be sent back to the dating apps.
Listen to De My Abuelita First as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As far as the actual subject of this episode, I hope that there will be a book about them at some point. I know there are a couple of people that have done interviews with the folks who are still living, which, since this research took place in the 50s and 60s, a lot of people have passed away at this point. there are a lot of documents that people have donated to NASA. The fact that the one way that people could communicate with their families back home was through letters means that there are a lot of letters. And because this was how people were used to communicating with each other, these letters, a lot of them are really descriptive.
Right.
And so, you know, there's a potential resource for that also. So hopefully at some point there will be a book about all of this, all of these folks and their contributions. A lot of people have made comparisons to the women computers who were, became known as the hidden figures of the space program and who have become way more better known in the last several years. We didn't get into at all how these were all men and all the research was being done on men. And at the time, men were the only people who were allowed to go to space. But that kind of felt like a whole additional topic.
Layer, yeah. Yeah, I'm glad you did this one because it is fascinating. It's also just fascinating to me, like, to think about human physiology and how seemingly minute differences between people can cause huge differences in how they react to various stimuli. That's just a fascinating thing.
Yeah. I hope by the time this episode comes out, I have figured out a better way to share a transcript of it with people. And in fact, I wish we had transcripts of every single episode of our show. That has been something I've been advocating for so long. And like so much of what we do, because we are not independently employed.
Right.
We've always done this as part of our jobs, and our jobs are part of our company. Like something we've advocated with companies. I really liked how much effort Radiolab seems to have gone to with making this episode of their show accessible. And honestly, I would love it if the whole podcast industry took that kind of accessibility steps for shows at all times.
I mean, we should be for sure. It's so, like you said, it's a little bit tricky when you're not running independently and can't make all the decisions quickly, and it just comes with the package. Hopefully, I mean, that's my hope. As long as people keep raising those questions and poking at it, that helps, you know. We're doing it on our end. So if everybody does it on their end, eventually, hopefully, we will get there.
Hope so. Like, how many conversations have I had about this?
I know, right?
Many. Many. So hopefully, we'll see. We'll see. Fingers crossed. If you would like to write to us, we're historypodcast@iheartradio.com. We're also all over social media at Missed in History. That's where you'll find our Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. It's Friday. Hope whatever's happening over your weekend is good as possible. If you're working this weekend, I hope things go smoothly. If you're not working, hope you have some restful time and are nice to everybody who is around you and is at work. We'll be back with a Saturday classic tomorrow and Monday with a brand new episode. Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.